news reported today from our colleague Eamon Lynch of Golf Week. The PGA Tour board has approved a new approach for the 2024 schedule, and it is big. Todd Lewis down at Bay Hill with all the latest news and player reaction. Plus, 2020 champion of the Arnold Palmer Invitational, the golf psycho himself, Tyrrell Hatton, is standing by waiting to join us live. And the stars meet the media down at Bay Hill. World number two, Scottie Scheffler, battling to return to the top spot where they win this week. But world number three, Rory McIlroy, may have something to say about that. We get the latest from two of the game's biggest names coming up on Golf Today.
Golf Today.
The stars align as the tour hosts its first designated tournament of the Florida Swing, with the game's top players trying to tame Bay Hill Club and Lodge in the annual event honoring the great Arnold Palmer. And just check out, by the way, the strength of this field. Nine of the top 10 players in the world, including Worlds 1, 2 and 3. You've just got seven players missing in the world's top 50, 21 major winners, and all 14 champions on the PGA Tour will be in the field so far this season. As we welcome you into Golf Today, great to have you with us. Anna Jackson, so pleased to be alongside Matt Adams for the next couple of hours. And Matt, we have got some big news coming out this morning on the 2024 schedule. So let's get straight to it, shall we? As news reported today from our colleague Eamon Lynch of Golf Week, the PGA Tour board has approved a new approach for the 2024 schedule. You can see field sizes will be reduced in the designated events to between 70 and 78 players, and the 36-hole cut will be removed. These changes will not apply to the majors, the Players' Championship and the FedEx Cup Players' Tournaments. Now, just looking at some of the details here, five spots in the field earned through performance in non-designated events will be eligible for these designated events. Top 50 from previous season's BMW Championship qualify for reduced field designated events. So there is so much to get to with this big news this morning. So let's go down to Bay Hill where we find our very own Todd Lewis. Todd, what can you tell us on this news today?
Well, first, excellent and accurate reporting by Eamon Lynch. Last night, the PGA Tour board met here at Bay Hill and did approve this change for 2024, making a majority of the designated events no cut events, 70 to 78 players for the field. Now, you may be asking, what do you need to do as a PGA Tour member to get to these designated events next year? Well, making it to the BMW Championship is a huge deal because then you're in the top 50 of the FedEx Cup standings, and that is going to qualify you for all the designated events the following year. Another criteria, if you're inside the top 10 in the FedEx Cup standings heading into a designated event, let's use what happened last week as an example. Chris Kirk was outside the top 10 in the FedEx Cup standings. He wins the Honda Classic. If the system was in place now that is going to be proposed for next year, or that's going to happen next year, then Chris Kirk wins the Honda Classic, jumps inside the top 10 in the FedEx Cup standings, and would qualify for the Arnold Palmer Invitational presented by MasterCard. Then there's another criteria, and this is for players who are playing in non-designated events. According to the folks that I have talked to, there will be, let's say, two designated events, and then maybe a series of three, maybe four non-designated events to follow. Let's use this as a hypothetical. Let's say Honda Classic, Valspar, and Valero Texas Open. Those will happen maybe after the Arnold Palmer Invitational. The best players in those three non-designated events will then qualify for the next designated event. Let's say that's the Players. The schedule is still being worked out. The details are still being worked out, but that's exactly what's happening right now. The players here that you see behind me are going to be informed officially by the PGA Tour of the approval from the policy board within the hour. They will be informed primarily through text, and I can promise you there will be a lot of conversations between tour players and tour officials in regards to this news. One other thing that's going to happen, the official announcement of this policy board decision is going to be made public later today as well. And there's another little thing that's interesting in regards to the schedule for next year that the policy board approved. That is the Century Tournament of Champions. Now, in years past, it's been a small field. It's still going to be a smallish field, but those who qualify for the Century Tournament of Champions at Kapalua now will be all of the top 50 players that made it to the BMW Championship and the winners in the fall, along with the winners on the PGA Tour. So you are going to have a larger field, anywhere from 55 to maybe 60 players. So, of course, that is a designated event, and the Century Tournament of Champions is going to kick off the season for the PGA Tour in 2024 as well. Anna?
Wow, Todd, I mean, this is a major shakeup that we're going to be seeing next year in 2024. It's going to be affecting every single player, no matter where you stand in the rankings. What is the reaction from the players that you've spoken to so far?
Well, first, let's talk with a member of the PGA Tour policy board. He's one of the player directors, and he's probably, well, without a doubt, the most vocal leader on the PGA Tour, and that is Rory McIlroy. He was a part of that board meeting last night. I talked to him earlier this morning about the decision, and here's what he said in regards to benefiting the PGA Tour.
Look, it's not as if the PGA Tour hasn't had no-cut events. Like, we've had no-cut events since I've been on tour for the last 15 years. The WGCs, the playoffs. Obviously, we went with, like, you know, Zozo and CJ Cup in the fall. I mean, there's always been no-cut events. I think the no-cut thing just became a big deal whenever LIV came around, right? Like, that was sort of, you know, what prompted the whole discussion around it. But I think it guarantees the top players there for 4 days. And I'm certainly not one to reward mediocrity. This is the most aspirational tour to play in the world, and we have to keep it that way, and it has to be the toughest challenge for the best players in the world. And that's the sort of tour that we're trying to create. So this isn't a handout for guys that don't want to try anymore. And, you know, this is making the tour more pro-competitive. Even though there's a, you know, the no-cut aspect is more for the sort of commercial viability of it and making sure that your top guys are there to be seen for 4 days. You know, I think that's a part of it. But, you know, the reason that we're making these changes is because, like it or not, LIV have exploited, you know, maybe some weaknesses of what the tourist framework was. And we're trying to do things to rectify that.
Do you think there will be division in the locker room?
I think when the structure is properly explained to everyone, because I think everyone's is acting off of very limited information and limited knowledge. I think once it's explained to people and that this is built on meritocracy, this is built on guys having hope that they can play their way into these designated events, that they don't have to wait a year, for example, to have a good season and then get in, that, like, if you have really good play, it gets you in right away, that sort of stuff. And a churn as well. Like, you don't play well enough in these designated events, you're not in them the next year. You know, there is a churn to this, and we focused really hard on retention rates and trying to keep the retention rates of, say, the top 50 pretty much in line with historically what it's been. Like, even the system that we proposed in Delaware, like, that retention rate, like, historically it's been around 60%. The retention rate in Delaware, the Delaware sort of plan, was more like 80%, which feels way too much like a closed shop.
Right.
So to have more of that meritocracy feeling, to have more of that churn at the bottom so that if you don't perform, you're out, like, that's a really important part of this.
Of course, there are lead players on the PGA Tour like Rory McIlroy, Scottie Scheffler, Jon Rahm, just to name a few. And then there are other players who are out here trying to fight to keep their card on the PGA Tour, and they make up the field in a majority of the events on the PGA Tour as well. What about those guys? What do they feel right now, considering that there are a large amount of events in 2024 that will have the biggest amount of money that some may not be eligible to play? I caught up with some of those players, and here's what they had to say.
It's great because you got no cuts. I mean, but once again, now, look, I'm not on the pack. I'm not, you know, in those meetings. I would say that it's probably most likely disappointing for the younger guys, for the guys that are outside the top 50. We've got, looking at those now, we've got really two tours in one tour, which is probably, you know, the unfortunate side of things. But I understand that there's, you know, with the changes that we've had in regards to LIV and and all that. I think that has kind of put a little bit of pressure on the tour to, you know, come up with these designated events and then try and find the best formula. I felt like, you know, the first couple of designated events that we have had already have produced a lot of great fields. And then on top of it, once again, we're getting into like the West Coast swing where you can't have such a large field just because we're running into like daylight issues.
You know, I take full trust in the PAC members and everyone, Webb Simpson and those guys who are making the votes. And, you know, they're the ones that we voted on to make the decision for the players. So, you know, whatever they come up with, I take full trust. It's in the tour's best interest.
Got well over 100 players here at a great event, a great golf course. This won't happen here next year. And does that put even more pressure on you as a player to try to get into these events next year?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we're all trying to, you know, definitely get inside that top 70 or however many players it's going to be. But, you know, if it were me, I like having bigger fields. You know, it kind of takes away a story like Eric Cole last week where, you know, he's breaking out and doing a really good job. So stories like that are what really gets me going in the game of golf.
There's been division, you know, since the top players got together in Delaware and guys have wanted to know what was going on. And, you know, they, you know, felt as if, you know, a small portion of players were making a decision for the majority of players. And I hope there isn't a division. I think when it all comes out and when it's all laid out there and everyone can see the opportunities that are there, I think, like I said, there's going to be opportunities. There's ways for guys that aren't already have access to these designated events to gain access throughout the year. And if you play well, you're going to be in these designated events, and that's the way it should be. At the same time, the non-designated events are a very important thing on the PGA Tour. That was something that we talked about in those meetings, making sure that these non-designated events were taken care of, that the sponsors and that the purses going forward weren't going to take a hit, that they were also continuing to grow. So I think looking at it at a whole, and listen, I can be a little biased because I was in that meeting, and I am one of those top players that was in that meetings, but I think it allows guys and it gives opportunities that if you play well, you're going to be in some really great events playing for a lot of money. And I think at the end of the day, that is what the game of golf and the PGA Tour has always been about. If you play well, you get rewarded. If you don't play well, you don't get rewarded. And that's what we're still maintaining out here on the PGA Tour. And I think that's one of the exciting things that we're going to have going forward or continue to have going forward. So, I think it's a great day and it's a great future for the PGA Tour. And I think, you know, I'm excited as a lot of other players are out here to see, you know, 24 come about and the years beyond to see the continued growth of the PGA Tour going forward.
Now, there's a lot to digest there from Billy Horschel. As he mentioned, there has been some divisiveness here on the PGA Tour, kind of, according to some players, a have and have nots kind of feeling out here on tour. And there are elite players, Billy's one of them, and there are those who are trying to get to that level. I talked to one player who was just getting the news today. He didn't want to come on camera, but he was very upset. And he did say to me this on record after hearing the news today. He's one of those players that's trying to keep his card. He said, they better have security at tour headquarters next week for the players. The simple answer, according to many of the players you talk to who are for this, play better. And then you'll be able to play for more money out here on the PGA Tour. Anna?
Simple as that. Play better, Todd. Thank you. Fantastic reporting there. I mean, Matt, this is fascinating. There is so much to digest. There is so much to break down. We always knew we were going to see some pretty major changes to the schedule in 2024. But what do you think? Designated events, reduced field, no cut. How does that sit with you?
They're major changes. My reaction to it is kind of a myriad of emotions right now, as I'm sure it is with a lot of different people. And we have to start with the statement, the presumption that we don't have all the details. We're waiting for more details to come in. But the initial reaction, I go to something that Todd just said, the idea of the haves and the have-nots, because while we're being told that there will be opportunities for ascension into these designated events, bearing in mind that designated events, by their very nature, are going to award more FedEx Cup points in the top 50 after the BMW Championship that are so critical, it's going to be harder for players that are not in the designated events to get into that category and thus assure themselves a position in the season that will be. I did think it was interesting that Rory McIlroy said, yeah, we had weaknesses in who we are and what we do, and it was reaction to LIV Golf, and that had an impact on it. And surely you're seeing the social media reaction is saying, so wait a minute, you've now gone to limited field events and no cuts. Isn't that exactly what LIV is doing? Now, LIV is even more restrictive in terms of the total number than what they're proposing on the PGA Tour. So I do think it's interesting, but I do have concerns about the whole idea, the cliche of just play better. That is true. But from what I've heard about the opportunities, again, of ascension of players, it's more than just playing better. You have to be way up on the leaderboard. So it's harder for us to see a player through a natural ascension, maybe a 30-place finish, and then a 20-place, and then a 15, and then a 12, and all of a sudden a 5, and then all of a sudden they're contending for a win. While they can do that, they can't do it on the weeks when there's designated events if they're blocked from them otherwise in terms of that pursuit. So we need more information to know fully what's going on here. What they're doing, though, is this, Anna. We know that for the sponsors, for television, for the host sites, they want the stars. Mm-hmm. They want to know that they're going to have the stars. Rory talked about it. You're going to have them for all four rounds. So for those very important constituencies, you're going to have them. From a fan's perspective, well, we're going to be able to watch the best players in the world. We're going to be able to watch them for four rounds. Again, all of that is great. And that's what we're, even this week, we're celebrating with the Arnold Palmer Invitational that has such a stacked field. But in terms of watching players, we're right before our eyes. They evolve into one of the great players of the game. It seems like that's going to be a little bit more of a gratuitous path than what it's been in the past.
Yeah, and I think one really important message that Rory McIlroy putting across is that we're not here to reward mediocrity. You know, we are here to reward the best. And I think pretty much every other sport in America is out there to reward the stars. And ultimately, they are the big stories that the majority of golf fans sort of do want to watch. And, you know, there will be 5 places earned through performances in non-designated events to get into these designated events. So, of course, the shop is smaller, but the door is not closed. And I think that is the fundamental thing. And also, so far, I think these designated events have been a great success. We've seen some fantastic fields assembled. And then look at the Honda Classic. You know, we went into the Honda Classic with 2 of the top 20 players in the world. And it sort of branded itself as someone where you're not going to see the stars, but you're going to see storylines where players will change their lives. And that's exactly what we saw. So as long as the tour kind of recognizes that and doesn't try to pretend that every event is the same, because they're not. Like Jason Day said, it's sort of 2 tours in one now. And I think that's something that the tour can lean into and actually make sort of all these events exciting in their own way. So that is big news this morning. And we're going to have plenty coming up later in the show on this news. But let's get back to the Arnold Palmer Invitational, shall we? Because we have got a fantastic field out there. Check out some of these notable first round tee times getting kicked off tomorrow. World number 2 now, Scottie Scheffler alongside John Rahm and Matt Fitzpatrick. Xander Schauffele out there with world number 1 John Rahm and Colin Morikawa. They are at 12:28 p.m. Eastern. And Rory McIlroy, Max Homa and Tyrrell Hatton out at 12:50 p.m. Eastern. Well, speaking of Tyrrell Hatton, let's flash back to 2020, shall we, where the Englishman broke through on the PGA Tour for the very first time, reminding ourselves of some of his highlights at the co-lead here on the final day on 7.
From 195 yards that year, he was ranked 7th in this distance on tour, and he rolled it to that distance, 2 feet. He'd make a birdie there to get to 5 under. Here he is, the par 5, 16th. He needs this to get up and down and save par.
Yeah, big moment for Hatton there on 16. That would give him the solo lead, saving par there. And then on to win. Matt, great moment for him here.
Absolutely. When you can win at the house that the King built, it is so distinctive, also distinctive for him as it was his breakthrough victory on the PGA Tour. A 6-time winner on the DP World Tour. There you can see in 6 starts has that win in 2020. three top fours, and no miscuts.
Yeah, he has got a fantastic record here. So let's welcome in the man himself, shall we? It is time now for Past Champion Chat, as we are joined by Tyrrell Hatton. Tyrrell, really good to see you. Thanks, sir, for joining us, my friend. Tell us, looking back on that win now, how big of a moment in your career was it breaking through on the PGA Tour for the first time?
Yeah, it was a massive week for me. Obviously, to do it at such an iconic venue as well made it extra special. Pretty nervous coming down the last few holes. Obviously, Leishman kind of crept up on me on the back nine, and made it a little bit more nerve-wracking than perhaps I would have liked it to be.
Tyrrell, of course, you heard the big news coming out this morning about changes coming to the PGA Tour in 2024. I'm curious what your reaction is to what you've heard so far.
Well, it's obviously quite a big change to than what we've, I guess, been used to. But I think it kind of boils down to if you play well this year, then you earn the right to be in those tournaments starting next year. Some exciting changes, I think, and hopefully I'll be a part of it.
And so far, Tyrrell, that you have. A nice tie seventh for you at Phoenix. They're just the second designated event that we had out here this year. I know you were a little bit disappointed with your season last year. What would be a good year for Tyrrell Hatton this time around?
Yeah, well, I mean, I said I was disappointed with last year. It was, I know it sounds a bit unlike me, but speaking when I was maybe a bit hot-headed, not potentially thinking it through. It wasn't a bad year last year. It was very consistent without doing anything like amazing. It was a shame to not have an opportunity to win tournaments. But I think over the course of the whole year, I missed two cuts, which isn't a bad thing. I think going into this year, I'd love to give myself the opportunity to win on the PGA Tour again. My game seems to be not in a bad place. I just need the putter to warm up a little bit for me. Generally, that's always been a strength of mine, and certainly in the two tournaments I've played on the PGA Tour this year, on Sunday I've sort of lost strokes against the rest of the field, which it's kind of not where you want to be. So, but having said that, Bay Hill, it's always been a decent venue for me putting wise, and I'm hoping for the same again this week.
Tyrrell, when you look at your performance at Bay Hill, tie for fourth in 2017, of course, the victory in 20, a tie for second last year in that runner-up performance. This year, Bay Hill will be playing as difficult as it ever has. It was fourth on tour last year, but we've got some wins that are coming in, and it looks like from your tee time draw, you'll be dealing with some of those. What are your thoughts about conditions coming up the next few days?
Yeah, it's Friday sounds like it's going to be a pretty tough test with, as you said, the winds that are forecasted. It'll be interesting to see how the course is set up, because typically, yeah, we do get a bit of breeze here most years, but they kind of let the course go and it gets ridiculously firm and fast. But with the forecasted winds on Friday, I guess they're going to have to maybe put a little bit more water on than they would normally like to, and maybe not have the greens as fast, just otherwise there's the potential for it to be unplayable, which at the end of the day no one really wants. So it'll be interesting to see how the course kind of, how firm they can get it. But hopefully I'll be ready for whatever's put in front of us.
Tyrrell, one element to the broadcast this year that everyone has been really enjoying are these walk and talks. Now, you just alluded to it just a moment ago, saying you can be a little hot-headed on there on the course. Now, when there is a hot mic, you are one of the people who everybody loves hearing from. Is it something that you would ever consider? I know you said you potentially weren't too keen on the idea.
Yeah, I mean, it's more down to, I guess, how me and Mick, my caddy, interact. Like, there's really not, there's not very often where there's that much chat between over the shot. I keep it very simple. I guess most of my coverage kind of comes from what happens after the golf shots that I hit. So that seems to be, some people seem to enjoy it, some people seem to not. But it is what it is.
Well, Tyrrell, let me tell you, you have captured the love of American golf fans out here, because I think you're a little bit more interesting and funny than you think you are. You have become an absolute star on the DP World Tour social media scene. That golf psycho that was posted earlier this year was just brilliant. How much do you enjoy sort of taking that role and entertaining the world with your bizarrely good acting skills, by the way?
I was directed very well, I will say that. I haven't actually seen the film yet still. Before we started the filming, they showed the clip of the boardroom scene, and yeah, kind of just went off that. It was good fun. It was obviously, it's great how well it's been received, and when it goes as well as that and everyone seems to appreciate it, then it's, you know, it's definitely worth the time and effort that everyone puts in with making it what it is.
As Anna said, it was very entertaining, as you are. We wish you great success this week and moving forward. Thank you for your time, Tyrrell.
Thank you very much.
Coming up, no one has had more success at Bay Hill than 82-time PGA Tour winner Tiger Woods. What would world number one Jon Rahm say he learned from Tiger? Find out right after the break. Welcome back to Golf Today. Let's flash back to 1991. A 15-year-old Tiger Woods won his first of three straight U.S. Junior Amateur titles at Bay Hill. And Bay Hill has always been a special place to Tiger. Tiger Woods has the most wins in this tournament with 8. 2000, 2001, 2002, 2003, 2008, 2009, 2012, and 2013. That ties the record for the most wins in a single PGA Tour event. Ties him none other than Sam Snead. Woods' 8 wins at Bay Hill is also a PGA Tour record for most wins on the same course. On Tuesday, world number one Jon Rahm shared what he has learned from watching Tiger's dominance at this event.
You know, I learned why Tiger has had success here. It's a ball striker's golf course. We need to be very accurate with the irons. And obviously, like everywhere else, you have to be good on the greens. But it is a golf course where I could tell Tiger could manage his way around, right? For the most part, you know, you want to miss right of the tee, because that's always going to give you the better chance going onto the greens. A lot of the hazards are on the left, so seeing that, it made sense. You know, see a lot of similarities on the courses that Tiger did well at, and luckily I've been able to do well at most of them, so I learned that this could be a golf course for me.
Okay, well, you can catch the world number one in action tomorrow. 12:28 p.m. Eastern is his tee time, alongside Xander Schauffele and Colin Morikawa. Well, with more on the Arnold Palmer Invitational, let's head back out to Bay Hill, where we find our own Damon Hatke, who will be on the ground as our correspondent this week. Damon, it is really good to see you, my friend. Tell us, what is your reaction to the news of the day surrounding the PGA Tour's approval to change the schedule beginning of next year?
Yeah, Anna, it's great to be here at Bay Hill. I'm still kind of digesting the news. Personally, I love the designated events so far. I think they've been compelling television. But I also loved last week the Honda Classic, a non-designated event. You had wonderful stories with Chris Kirk and Eric Cole as well. I spoke to Troy Merritt, who's a two-time winner on the PGA Tour. He said he understood the changes, but the no-cut, it made him think a little bit. He said, look at this place. Imagine Bay Hill on a Friday when the players are +4 or +5 and the wind is churning and the guys are fighting to make the cut. That's compelling television as well. And I always thought the WGCs, with the lack of a cut, lacked a little something, a little oomph, a little spark. I think professional sports needs jeopardy, and I think that the cut provides jeopardy for the best players in the world.
Have you had a chance, Damon, to speak with any of those best players in the world and get their sense of this or the week ahead?
I have. I spoke to Tony Finau yesterday. In fact, walked a few holes with Tony. He's playing fantastic golf. It was neat. He was walking with Kamaya Johnson. Kamaya, APGA veteran who's playing on PGA Tour Latino America. So it was neat to see their relationship. Kamaya saying, I just need some opportunities and I'll get out here on the PGA Tour eventually. But Tony said his game is in a great place. He's told me that his ball striking is as good as it has ever been. It's all about matching up the flat stick. He said, look at the way John Rahm is playing right now. It's expert ball striking and a hot putter. And that's what Tony had when he went back-to-back over the summer at the Rocket Mortgage in 3M, and he got the job done as well in Houston. I asked Tony about the designated events as well. He said one thing he loves about the designated events is the opportunity for rivalries to develop. Think what we've seen already this season. You had Max Homa and John Rahm in L.A. and San Diego. You had John Rahm and Scottie Scheffler in Phoenix. The more these big-time players get together, the more we're going to see rivalries develop and storylines develop, and I think that's very good for the golf fan.
Yeah, it's a good point, Damon. And just finally, this is, of course, such a special week in the game as we honor the life and legacy of the great Arnold Palmer. I mean, I know you had a few special moments with him yourself.
Yeah, I think of two in particular. One was the first time I met him back in 2006. Jim Nance was doing a colorization of the 1960 Masters, and a bunch of sports writers, golf writers, were invited to Bel Air Country Club to kind of anticipate what that footage would look like. And Arnold Palmer was there, and he kind of took stock of the room and was looking to see who he knew and who he didn't. He didn't know me. I was a relatively new golf writer at the New York Times. And, we met each other's gaze, and he just gave me a little bit of a nod, a little bit of a wink. And I just thought he was kind of welcoming me into the fold of golf writers. He didn't have to do it, but he made me feel 10 feet tall. And then the last time I spent time with Mr. Palmer was 2016 at the U.S. Open. Morning drive was off the air. We were preempted because of a rain delay. So I got to go, along with Gary Williams and Matt Ginella, to La Trobe Country Club. We spent the afternoon with Mr. Palmer. We watched coverage of the U.S. Open. I'll never forget Jason Day hit this shot out of the rough. He has a fantastic short game. I said, Mr. Palmer, how do you hit a shot like that? And he said, well, if you don't pay attention, you're going to miss the highlight. And it was a replay, a slow motion of Jason Day hitting a great short game shot. And he gave me a little elbow to the ribs. He always made you feel like the most important person in the room. I miss him to this day, and his energy is still felt here at Bay Hill Club and Lodge.
Oh, very well said, Damon. Well, best of luck this week on the broadcast. May I say you are looking very dapper in your new role, and we're looking forward to seeing you out there.
Awesome.
Thank you,
stuff.
Anna. Thank you, Matt.
See ya. Thank you.
Welcome back to Golf Today. Well, this week, the best in the women's game head to Sentosa Golf Club in Singapore for the HSBC Women's World Championship. Coverage begins tonight at 9:30 p.m. Eastern, right here on Golf Channel. And this is one that you do not want to miss. The second half of the Asian swing is boasting quite the field. You've got world's number 1, 2, and 3, Lydia Ko, Nelly Korda, and Minji Lee. And the list of past champions is quite remarkable. You've also got Jin Young Ko, who is your defending champion.
Sticking with the LPGA, it's time to shine a spotlight on rookie Aileen Crowther. Crowther played college golf at Stanford University, where she was a member of the 2022 NCAA championship team. That year, she earned the WGCA Dinosaur Trophy, which recognizes a top female collegiate golfer who excels in both academics and athletics. In 2020, she rallied from three down through four holes of the 18-hole championship match to win the women's amateur championship with a one-up victory over Annabelle Fuller at West Lancashire. In the fall, she finished tied for third at the LPGA Q Series. She earned her LPGA membership for the 2023 season. Absolute delight to welcome Aileen into the program now. So, Aileen, how has the transition gone from college golf to being out there on your own now on the pro level?
I think it's been great so far. I've been playing a couple tournaments on the LET for an early start to the season. And I think it's been great. I mean, the only thing that's really changed is that I'm now making money playing golf. I think I haven't really tried to change anything else around me or anything about me. And I have my brother traveling with me, and he's caddying. He's probably going to caddy all season on the LPGA. So I'm super excited.
Well, we have seen you tee it up on the LPGA previously. You've also played in five majors during your time as an amateur. What did you learn about yourself and just about being around the world's best in those opportunities that you found yourself in?
Yeah, I mean, I was very fortunate to have those opportunities. And I think the biggest thing I learned is that I can compete for sure. And it sort of, it was great having those opportunities because it sort of gave me a taste of what I'm getting this upcoming season and hopefully many more seasons to come.
You have such a great personality. There's a light that seems to shine from you. When you're out there as a professional athlete, particularly as a professional golfer, you will represent your own brand. What do you want your brand to represent to the world?
Oh, that's a very good question. I think I'm pretty personable. I like to be around people, so I think I ideally want to represent that. And have people enjoy watching me. I think that's probably the biggest thing.
Well, you had such great success there with Stanford during your college years, of course, becoming national champions. That was just so much fun to watch. And clearly the relationships that you had with your teammates at the time, you had such a bond and it was so special to watch. A, you sort of still in contact with those girls, and just talk us through that week and how you'll always remember that.
To your first question, I think it's a little hard being across the globe. It was a lot easier being on campus together, but I do try to keep up every now and then. And then to your second question, I mean, it was great being on the team with all those girls. I think we learned so much from each other, and that bond during nationals was very, very special. And I think we're holding on to that for sure.
Aileen, obviously professional golf is something that's very aspirational. Curious what your goals are, your ambitions for what lies ahead for 2023.
I think my biggest thing for 2023 is to play all majors. I think that'd be great to tee it up at those big events again. I think a big highlight would be the US Open at Pebble Beach this year. And I think for the future, probably teeing it up for Europe at the Solheim Cup. Yeah, we'll see about that this year.
I'm sure Europe would absolutely love to have a talent like yours in their team, Aileen. And just finally, I mean, the schedule's been all a bit funny at the beginning of this season's LPGA Tour. Of course, we haven't had our first full field event until just a couple of weeks' time at the Drive On Championship. So you haven't been able to start on the LPGA yet. What's that wait been like, and how much do you just want to get going at this point?
I definitely want to get going on the LPGA. I'm very, very excited to get the season started. I was also fortunate enough to get my LET card at the end of last year, so I've been competing a little bit, which is nice to get sort of a head start before that first event end of March.
Okay, well, Aileen, congratulations on all your success so far. You are truly an upcoming talent, and we can't wait to see what you do this season, so best of luck.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Alrighty, good stuff. Well, when Golf Today is back, designated events are undergoing a makeover in 2024 as the PGA Tour schedule is set to change. Coming up, the top players are giving their thoughts, including Rory McIlroy and Scottie Scheffler. Stay tuned.
Big news today surrounding PGA Tour schedule changes in 2024. What are the players saying about reduced field sizes and no cuts in designated events? Find out. Stars are everywhere in this week's Arnold Palmer Invitational. Scotty and Rory, world number 2 and 3, and both are past champions. Are they trending towards another title? You'll hear from both coming up. And the PGA Tour University Velocity Global Rankings is giving College Game's top seniors a chance at PGA Tour membership. Texas Tech's Ludwig Aberg is one of those players with a chance at a card, and he'll join this hour. Hour 2 of Golf Today starts now.
Golf Today.
Welcome back to Golf Today. The PGA Tour's Florida Swing continues this week in Orlando with the Arnold Palmer Invitational presented by MasterCard. A reminder, you can catch live first round coverage Thursday, 3 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on Golf Channel. As we welcome you into our Golf Today studio, good to have you with us for this second hour. Anna Jackson, delighted to be alongside Matt Adams for the next hour. And many designated events are back. This is going to be such a great week, always such a special week. The field is fantastic, but it's also an opportunity that we get to celebrate the legacy of the great Arnold Palmer.
There's no doubt about it. Mr. Palmer was so excited about his beloved Bay Hill. I can remember one year, and I knew how important it was to him and how much he loved this golf course. And I said to Mr. Palmer, he was talking about changes and tweaks that he had made and little changes to the green. And I said, but Mr. Palmer, how do you touch up the Mona Lisa? And he had that sparkle in his eye that just lit up at that thought that this is his masterpiece, because that's what he felt. So that lineage continues. The way that they have this golf course set up, the growing conditions, the heat that they've had in Florida, all is contributing to really thick and heavy rough. Bay Hill is so tough. Last year, It was the fourth hardest on tour. Consider that the first three, the U.S. Open site, Brookline Country Club. After that, it was Southern Hills for the PGA, and then Augusta National for the Masters. Number four was Bay Hill. So all of us are in for a great ride today, this week, there's no doubt.
Yeah, you're right. The Arnold Palmer Invitational is back and even better than it has been the last couple of years, partly in thanks, of course, to it being a designated event this year. And on that note, there was some news that was reported first today from our colleague Eamon Lynch of Golf Week, as the PGA Tour Board has approved a new approach for the 2024 schedule. Field sizes will be reduced in these designated events to between 70 and 78 players. The 36-hole cut will be removed, and these changes will not apply, though, to the majors, the Players' Championship and the FedEx Cup playoff tournament. So you can see here the fields are reduced. Those field size changes will not be applied to those events I've just mentioned. The top 50 from previous seasons BMW Championship qualify for the reduced field designated events. That is important, as well as the five spots in field earned through performance in non-designated events. So there is still opportunity to play your way in. So for more, let's get down to Bay Hill, shall we, where we join our Todd Lewis reporting on the ground. Todd, what can you tell us about this news today?
Well, first off, Eamon Lynch did a great job in reporting this and actually breaking this. PGA Tour players are finding out via reading Eamon's article or getting text now from the PGA Tour as they inform their membership about the decision last night from the PGA Tour Policy Board to have no cut events in most of the designated events in 2024. So you may be asking, how do you get into these designated events if you're a PGA Tour player? Getting to the BMW Championship in the FedEx Cup playoffs is a big deal, because that means you finish inside the top 50 in the FedEx Cup standings, and that makes you exempt into 2024 for these designated events. Now, you can also make these events if you, prior to a designated event, crack the top 10 in the FedEx Cup standings and you weren't already exempt. What does that mean? Let's say that the policy that's going to be put in place for next year is happening this year. Chris Kirk was not eligible to play in these designated events at the Arnold Palmer Invitational, but last week he won a non-designated event, the Honda Classic, cracked the top 10 now. He's currently in the top 10 in the FedEx Cup standings, meaning he would be eligible to play the Arnold Palmer Invitational. Now, there's another criteria that can get you into these designated events for 2024. Right now, this is still being finalized, but preliminarily, the schedule is going to look like designated event, and then a series of likely three, maybe four, non-designated events. And in those non-designated events, the top players will then be eligible for the next designated event. So there are several ways for players to get inside, or get into those fields, rather, for the PGA Tour designated events in 2024. Now, you may think, well, most of the designated events, if not all of them, next year will be no-cut events. That is not the case. The major championships and the players will have cuts. From what I'm hearing from the PGA Tour and those associated with this decision, it's a very real possibility the legacy events, I'm talking about the Genesis Invitational hosted by Tiger Woods, of course the Memorial hosted by Jack Nicklaus, and this one, the Arnold Palmer Invitational, it's a very good chance those events will have cuts. And there are other events that aren't designed to have cuts. For instance, the FedEx Cup playoff events. Top 70 make the FedEx Cup playoffs. It goes from 70 to Memphis, then to the BMW Championship, and then the Tour Championship, 70, 50, 30. Never designed to have a cut this season. And there's, of course, the Century Tournament of Champions, which is not designed to have a cut as well. So not all of these events next year will be no-cut events. Probably five or six will be no-cut events. So not a large majority of those events that we're talking about. And getting back quickly to the Century Tournament of Champions, that's the first designated event for the new season, the first actual tour event for the new season in 2024. Last year, the top 30 that made the Tour Championship field were eligible to play at the Century Tournament of Champions. Next year, it's going to be those top 50 that make the BMW Championship. They are in the field, winners on the PGA Tour, and of course, that includes the fault winners as well. Anna?
Okay, so Todd, clearly still so much to learn about what we've found out today, but fantastic reporting. I mean, the big question is, what is the player reaction to this? Because this affects everybody.
Yeah, it does, and you're going to get into some haves and have-nots here. That's kind of the feeling. It's kind of been the feeling on the PGA Tour. We're going to talk about that in a moment. But Rory McIlroy has been the voice of the PGA Tour for the last couple of years, and he is on the PGA Tour Policy Board. He's one of the player directors on that board. He was in that meeting last night here in Orlando and ultimately helped make that decision for these non-cut events happening next year in 2024. I caught up with him today. I had a long conversation, and I asked him why this decision will benefit the PGA Tour and its fans.
Look, it's not as if the PGA Tour hasn't had no-cut events. Like, we've had no-cut events since I've been on tour for the last 15 years. The WGCs, the playoffs. Obviously, we went with, like, you know, Zozo and CJ Cup in the fall. I mean, there's always been no-cut events. I think the no-cut thing just became a big deal whenever LIV came around, right? Like, that was sort of, you know, what prompted the whole discussion around it. But I think it guarantees the top players there for 4 days. And I'm certainly not one to reward mediocrity. This is the most aspirational tour to play in the world, and we have to keep it that way, and it has to be the toughest challenge for the best players in the world. And that's the sort of tour that we're trying to create. So this isn't a handout for guys that don't want to try anymore. And, you know, this is making the tour more pro-competitive. Even though there's a, you know, the no-cut aspect is more for the sort of commercial viability of it and making sure that your top guys are there to be seen for 4 days. You know, I think that's a part of it. But, you know, the reason that we're making these changes is because, like it or not, LIV have exploited, you know, maybe some weaknesses of what the tourist framework was. And we're trying to do things to rectify that.
Do you think there will be division in the locker room?
I think when the structure is properly explained to everyone, because I think everyone's is acting off of very limited information and limited knowledge. I think once it's explained to people and that this is built on meritocracy, this is built on guys having hope that they can play their way into these designated events, that they don't have to wait a year, for example, to have a good season and then get in, that, like, if you have really good play, it gets you in right away, that sort of stuff. And a churn as well. Like, you don't play well enough in these designated events, you're not in them the next year. You know, there is a churn to this, and we focused really hard on retention rates and trying to keep the retention rates of, say, the top 50 pretty much in line with historically what it's been. Like, even the system that we proposed in Delaware, like, that retention rate, like, historically it's been around 60%. The retention rate in Delaware, the Delaware sort of plan, was more like 80%, which feels way too much like a closed shop. Right. So to have more of that meritocracy feeling, to have more of that churn at the bottom so that if you don't perform, you're out, like, that's a really important part of this.
And of course, Rory McIlroy is an elite, talented, popular player out here on the PGA Tour, and there are several other like them. And then there are other players out here who are battling to make a good living. Sure, they would like to play as well as Rory. Some of them not quite that strong a player, and they're trying to keep their card on the PGA Tour. What about those players? That's the divisiveness that I was talking about. Maybe a two-tiered system out here on the PGA Tour. Some of the players feel that's out here already, that the elite players get all the benefits. Here's what some of those players that are trying to make it to that elite level and some that are already there had to say about the decision and the possible divisiveness out here on the PGA Tour.
Yeah, those are obviously difficult conversations. You know, guys that sit on, you know, both sides of the fence with that. And, I think it's exciting. I think it's going to be good. I think it increases the likelihood of having, you know, your big stars kind of go together. And I think just the model in itself whether it's 120 or 70, whichever way it sits, it's a good model to have your best guys playing together more often. I think as a tour, before we were stretched thin a little bit where we had guys kind of sporadically playing, and I think it's been successful in the first three events. I mean, you had Century, small field with John and Colin going at it there towards the end, and then Phoenix was me, John, and Nick Taylor, which was a cool story, and then Riv was really cool seeing John and Max going at it down the stretch. And so I think three successful first weeks, and hopefully we see some more of that going forward. If you're taking away a playing opportunity for guys, that hurts. You don't ever want to take that away. But I think what it's going to do is it's going to benefit the tour as a whole. I mean, if you got to imagine, if you have those 70 main fields go to 120, that's 50 extra guys in that field. And that's, if you're in those fields, you're going to play. You're going to want to play because it's double the money. And I mean, why not? You get to play against the best players in the world. And if you, I lost my train of thought. If you put those 50 guys in, they're not playing the next event. And so that next event is going to suffer even more. And if you continue to do that throughout the year, we're going to lose events on tour, and that's losing playing opportunities as well. And so creating a product with the 70-man fields really makes it kind of a something to strive towards as players. And so if there's a year where I don't finish in the top 15 in the FedEx Cup, I'm going to be working my butt off to get back in there because I want to be playing in those smaller field, bigger purse events. And it's more of a reward for the guys that are playing the best. And I think it's a good opportunity for fans to be able to see everybody for 4 days at an event. And know if you're going out there on Saturday and Sunday, you're going to be able to see Rory McIlroy, John Rahm, and all the guys that you see on TV all the time. It's I think it's a more marketable product for us.
You know, I take full trust in the PAC members and everyone, Webb Simpson and those guys who are making the votes. And, you know, they're the ones that we voted on to make the decision for the players. So, you know, whatever they come up with, I take full trust. It's in the tour's best interest.
Got well over 100 players here at a great event, a great golf course. This won't happen here next year. And does that put even more pressure on you as a player to try to get into these events next year?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we're all trying to, you know, definitely get inside that top 70 or however many players it's going to be. But, you know, if it were me, I like having bigger fields. You know, it kind of takes away a story like Eric Cole last week where, he's breaking out and doing a really good job. So stories like that are what really gets me going in the game of golf.
There's been division, you know, since the top players got together in Delaware and guys have wanted to know what was going on. And, you know, they, you know, felt as if, you know, a small portion of players were making a decision for the majority of players. And I hope there isn't a division. I think when it all comes out and when it's all laid out there and everyone can see the opportunities that are there, I think, like I said, there's going to be opportunities. There's ways for guys that aren't already have access to these designated events to gain access throughout the year. And if you play well, you're going to be in these designated events, and that's the way it should be. At the same time, the non-designated events are a very important thing on the PGA Tour. That was something that we talked about in those meetings, making sure that these non-designated events were taken care of, that the sponsors and that the purses going forward weren't going to take a hit, that they were also continuing to grow. So I think looking at it at a whole, and listen, I can be a little biased because I was in that meeting, and I am one of those top players that was in that meetings, but I think it allows guys and it gives opportunities that if you play well, you're going to be in some really great events playing for a lot of money. And I think at the end of the day, that is what the game of golf and the PGA Tour has always been about. If you play well, you get rewarded. If you don't play well, you don't get rewarded. And that's what we're still maintaining out here on the PGA Tour. And I think that's one of the exciting things that we're going to have going forward or continue to have going forward. So, I think it's a great day and it's a great future for the PGA Tour. And I think, I'm excited as a lot of other players are out here to see, you know, 24 come about and the years beyond to see the continued growth of the PGA Tour going forward.
I think it's it rewards really good play. You know, and if you play your way into it, you get into these larger tournaments and, you know, with the smaller field, no cut, and it feels like more majors kind of deal, like just smaller, more elite fields, which I think is great. I think it's good. It rewards good play, but also at the same time, I guess it might create a little bit of maybe like a two-sided tour a little bit where it might be harder to play your way into these events. But I think at the end of the day, like, you know, having the best players play together more often is a good thing. And I think this rewards really good play, and I think it's awesome. I think it'll be fun, and hopefully I can find myself in all those big events, and I look forward to it.
do you feel like it'll be difficult to get into those events? Because right now it looks like it's going to be 12 of them.
Yeah, I think, I mean...
compared to what you're doing now.
Right, yeah. I don't know what the criteria will be. I feel like starting out for rookies and stuff, and I feel like it was already a hard spot to get into those events, so I don't know if it makes it that much tougher. But, yeah, and, you know, like I said, I think it's, you know, rewarding good play at the end of the day is what everybody wants. And I think, you know, if you play well, you get into these big events and, you know, create more opportunity to see the best guys more often.
Okay, again, players are just now getting that information from the decision last night made by the PGA Tour Policy Board. We are expected to hear this publicly from the PGA Tour later today. Now, some of the initial responses that the players have given me, not all of them have been in favor of this decision. As a matter of fact, one prominent player who's a major champion said, quote, they better have security next week at the PGA Tour headquarters for the players. Now, maybe after that player and other players reads the fine print and ultimately understands that you can play your way into these elite events, these designated events throughout the season, then maybe they will change their mind. But there's a lot of, again, for these players to digest. And I will point out one thing, and in hearing all of this news coming down from the decision last night, these non-designated events are going to be more important now than maybe they are this year, because those players that are not already in these designated events, and again, top 50 in the FedEx Cup standings, grant you into all of those designated events the following year, and they're going to be some pretty strong names. You want to play in those events to try to earn your spot here in these designated events. So I think it's going to benefit at least those non-designated events for sure on the PGA Tour.
Great stuff, Todd. Big changes, exciting changes. So much to unpack, as you say, and we'll continue to do that for the rest of today's show. Todd, brilliant stuff, as always. All right, we'll stay with us here on Golf Today, because still to come on the show, the PGA Tour University Velocity Global Ranking is giving the college game's best players a chance to earn PGA Tour membership. Ludvig Åberg joins us next as he gets closer to the top spot as we reveal the latest rankings.
Golf Central Update, brought to you by Callaway Golf.
Welcome back to Golf Today. Well, the PGA Tour University Velocity Global Ranking is giving playing opportunities to the game's top college seniors. At the conclusion of the NCAA Men's Individual Golf Championships in May, the top player in the ranking will be awarded PGA Tour membership, while players inside the top 20 will receive status on the Korn Ferry Tour and other umbrella tours. So let's take a look at the PGA Tour University Velocity Global Ranking, the program that awards professional status to top graduating college golfers. These are your rankings 11 through 20. Some names you'll recognize there from the national championships, the likes of Ricky Costello, Derek Hitchner as well, a big name out there for Pepperdine at the moment, as we take a look of the rankings 1 through 10. And some exciting names that you'll see. Dylan Monanto, we've seen him perform well for North Carolina. Sam Bennett as well, Texas A&M. And at the top of the standings, you will see Ludvig Åberg from Texas Tech. So Åberg also played in the Arnold Palmer Cup at Bay Hill as a freshman, the annual Ryder Cup-style competition, which includes college golf's top male and female players, was highlighted by Åberg's play as he went 4-0 for the week, including a 5-4 victory to clinch the winning point for the international team. So let's get down to Bay Hill, where we find Ludvig Åberg himself. Ludvig, really good to see you. Congratulations on all of your success so far in your early career. Just starting with those rankings, the Velocity Global rankings, you are sat at the top at the moment. Huge opportunity for you to lock up your PGA Tour card. How much of a motivation is that in everything that you're doing at the moment?
Yeah, it's fun. You know, being here this week is a lot of fun. It's a little bit different to a college event, I'm not going to lie. But, you know, just be here hanging out and spend some time in this environment is obviously very valuable, and there's a lot of stuff that, you know, I can pick up on and I can learn and hopefully kind of put into my own game as well in the future.
With new pathways to the PGA Tour on offer, are you also, you described it as fun, are you also feeling any pressure to continue to perform and stay at the top?
You know, I think it kind of depends on how you view it. I try to view it more as a receipt of me doing some really good stuff. And, you know, if I keep doing these things that I know that work for me and the things that I know are good for my preparations, you know, hopefully I'll keep that spot. But, you know, if someone told me a couple of years ago that
I'll be in this situation coming my senior spring, I'd be pretty happy. So, you know, I view it as something that's very, very positive and trying to, you know, benefit off of this program.
Well, we've already seen you on the professional stage this year. You teed it up at the Dubai Desert Classic on the DP World Tour. You shot 65 in that opening round. We saw your name up on that leaderboard, Lugve. What did you learn from that experience?
Right. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Obviously, we had some weather issues down in Dubai, which I didn't really expect, but had a great week. Would have loved to play a little bit better over the weekend, but you know, I think any time that us amateurs get exposed to this kind of environment and these kind of tournaments, I think the easier it's just going to get. So there was a lot for me to learn, you know, through a competitive standpoint, through a strategic standpoint. So hopefully it's something that I can implement on this week and, you know, just try to keep it up. Yeah.
You spoke earlier about the benefit of where you are this week and the experience that you're about to have. But even with the Velocity Global Rankings, it illustrates the depth of talent in collegiate golf. I wonder if you could comment on how much college golf now is a preparation for stepping into the level that you're about to in the PGA Tour.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, for me, coming to college was a no-brainer. I felt like that's where you learn. That's the next step. And obviously being tour golf after college being the next step for that. But, you know, I think it speaks to these players being so good. And, you know, it translates into playing some good golf on the PGA Tour and in the pro ranks as well after college. So it prepares us very well. You know, these guys that are here this week have all been to college at some point. And I think it's a testament to how good college golf is. And hopefully we can, you know, keep playing good golf even after college.
Well, just finally, Texas Tech, you guys are no doubt contenders for the national title this year, ranked second in the country out there on GolfStat. What will you have to do, do you think, to lift the trophy this season?
Yeah, I mean, I think without a doubt, we have the skills to do it. We definitely have the team to do it. So, you know, there's the quality in our team is very good, and qualifying is a lot of fun because we have so many good players. So I think, you know, we try to keep a good camaraderie up between the players. And I think the team that's going to win is going to be the closest team. The guys that really enjoy spending time together, the guys who likes to play for each other and not necessarily for, you know, themselves. So we just try to be the closest team. We try to be the friendliest team and you know, do it the right way.
We're super excited that you're in the field this week. It should be an incredible opportunity. I'm sure that you are embracing. Thank you for your time and for spending some of it with us.
Yeah. Thank you. Appreciate it, guys. Thank you.
Thanks, Ludwig. Well, still to come with news today surrounding the future changes on the PGA Tour. Max Homa had a reaction worth hearing. That is next on Golf Today. Well, big news that came out this morning reported by Eamon Lynch of Golf Week. Fields reduced to 70 to 78 players with no cut when it involves these PGA Tour designated events. These are the events that are seeing these big changes. Field size changes will not apply to the majors, the players, or the FedEx Cup playoffs. The top 50 as well from the previous season's BMW Championship will qualify for these reduced field designated events, but there will still be 5 spots available in the field, which can be earned through performance in non-designated events. So the door is still open. So let's hear from a player who has had success on both sides of the coin. That is Max Homa, who reacted to the news earlier today.
Cutting the field sizes down, I know, is, you know, I just finished my pro and went on my phone briefly before I came in here, and I saw quite a bit of frustration, some from players, some from fans, that the fields are small. But I think the part that's frustrating, and maybe the part that just simply might be misunderstood, is that if we made these fields very large in these designated events, it would ruin non-designated events that have been staples of the PGA Tour, that go to cities that people love watching these events with their families. It would ruin them. That no one would play in half of them because it would no longer fit your schedule by any means.
The things you mentioned that would, you say would ruin some of these events where everybody's not going to play them, that's what the tour was built on to get to this point where we're at now.
Okay. Although that's not a question, I will.
Well, I mean, I just wanted to. Could you expand on that? How do you think it would ruin the events? Because that's how it's been done in the past, and
because the bottom 30 guys are going to be people like, and I'm going to say it because he works for the tour, Jason Gore will be playing in a PGA Tour events. And I say, we always joke with him, like, that's clearly not something we want. There was an event last year, and I'm not going to use the name of the player, but it was a kind of a joke, a running joke that this guy is playing in a golf tournament. He is a professional golfer. He is not a practicing professional golfer anymore. Those people will be in a ton of the events. And now the sponsors have to say, well, do we want the, you know, not quite a third of the field, but a chunk of the field is guys that won an event years and years ago that have jobs or have retired well before that. I understand your point that's what the tour was built on, but the tour had, in my opinion, a problem in this sense that 30% of the top 50 players on this tour were playing against each other week in and week out. So they looked at something that was a negative, a deficiency, and said, okay, we want more of the top guys playing against each other for the fans, for entertainment. That's not a good look that the only time you'll see the best players in the world teeing it up against each other is the players in the majors. You have to, it dilutes the other, 42 weeks that we play? I mean, that's a lot of weeks that you're watching, you're hoping a lot. You're hoping a lot for a phenomenal leaderboard. And I don't mean phenomenal. I think everyone out here is a tremendous golfer, but we know that fans have attached themselves to the Rorys, to the Johns, to the Scotties, to the Jordans, to the Justins. They're our household names, and they're, most of us are not a household name. So, yes, that's what it was built on, but it had also gotten bigger and bigger and more weeks and more playing opportunities, and that just thins it out throughout the year. If we had 15 events, it would be a sprint, and people would play all 15 of those, and you would see the same guys going at it week in and week out, and it would have shrunk. It would have made the field size might have been the same, but it would have shrunk who got into each event. We're keeping an idea that people will still get to play the same amount of events and a lot of the same events that they typically would, but there's just kind of brackets on it, and there's tons of room for growth for those guys. I almost think that some of these questions, in the sense that, oh, it's not letting as many people in, is doing them a disservice. They can play great and get in. And it's only room for growth.
Do you think there's a way to equate the stress someone feels trying to stay in that top 50 next year compared with previously trying to keep your card, stay in the 125?
It's a great question. This is another thing that I think is going to be a fun thing to watch. It is going to be hard. We are now playing against the best players every week. It is a major, in a way, or a major field every single week. So I was talking with a player last week that, in this exact moment is not in these designated events. And he had mentioned how it was nice playing the Honda, knowing that John Rahm is not there. That is a nice feeling right now. If John Rahm wasn't there in LA, I would have clipped off my second one there and I'd be a happy, happy man. So you got to go beat these guys every week. So it's going to be hard. It's going to be stressful, and it almost pre-stressful, like in the off season, thinking, dang, I got to get my stuff together, because it's not like these other guys have very many bad weeks. You're competing against the elite every day. Sure, you could say that the no cut, it takes some stress off of you because of, I guess, knowing you're going to get paid. But at the end of the day, I don't think anybody has gotten to where they have gotten to be in these designated events because they focus on how much money they make. They do it because they have focused on winning and being great and excelling and making it to the top of their game. So I think it will be a new and improved challenge. I think it's important that we all test each other against one another each week. And if you don't, you will get pushed aside and have to work your way back up. So I think it will be a different kind of stress that we haven't had before, but I do think it will be stressful.
Some brilliant thoughts there from Max Homer, and so many directions that you could take this, but just alluding to his point there of players being a little bit more strategic about where they do play. I mean, look at Chris Kirk, who won the Honda Classic last week. He purposefully avoided the Genesis Invitational because he thought he had a better chance at the Honda Classic. And look, that's exactly what he did. He won. He's punched his ticket to the Masters. if this was next year, he would now be eligible into the designated events. You know, there are ways to get into this now. What will be the top echelon of the game? Yes, it will be harder. The opportunities will be smaller, but the rewards will be so much bigger.
Yeah, I think we're waiting for more details on all of that. We did hear from Todd Lewis that perhaps the legacy events, those invitationals, will not be without a cut. So we'll see how that turns itself out. What's interesting about Max Homa is because if this is broken down into the haves and have-nots, he's been both a have-not and now a have. In 2017, he made a total of $18,000, went back down to the Korn Ferry Tour, earned his way back to a tour car, and got on the other side. Now, obviously, I think he's such a good guy, and he's so humble that he hasn't cast himself amongst the stars that he mentioned all by first name. So, again, as I'd mentioned in the first hour of the show today, I understand why they're doing this, because this is going to connect with the fans that want to see the stars. This is going to connect, thus, with television. This is going to connect with sponsors. It's going to connect with host sites. There's still a lot of questions, though, of what happened between the balance of the events that are not designated and those that are. Max Homa is telling us this is the best thing for them to have this kind of distinction. I'm not 100% convinced of that yet. I think we need more information to know.
I do like the idea, though, of having a clear contrast in what we are expecting to see on the PGA Tour every week now. The idea of having two designated events next to each other where you know you can sit back and relax and watch probably the top 20 players in the world, and then having the contrast of these non-designated events where you're going to see entirely different storylines and you're going to see the opportunity for players to change the complete trajectory of their career and play themselves in to the designated events. That's a cool storyline in itself, and I think it's something that the tour should embrace and that the broadcast should embrace. And at the beginning of the week of these non-designated events, tap into those storylines. And like Ryan Lavner mentioned in their podcast, when they're talking about the storylines of do you prefer the underdog or do you prefer the all-stars going head-to-head, I think if you have too much of either, you can be desensitized. You need both to fully appreciate the two ends of the scale when it comes to professional golf. And I personally think this is really exciting.
Yeah, we're going to see more of that balance when we get into the fall each year, too, because remember, the whole fall will be dedicated to those who are trying to keep their card.
Welcome back to Golf Today. Well, the world's best female amateur golfers will compete at Augusta National Golf Club 1 month from today. Live final round coverage of the Augusta National Women's Amateur is coming to NBC Saturday, April 1st. And Caitlin McNabb is a sophomore from South Africa on the TCU women's golf team. As a freshman, she broke the school's record for stroke average and was part of the All Big 12 team. In January, she found out she would be competing for the second time in the Augusta National Women's Amateur. So with that, I'm so pleased to welcome Caitlin into Golf Today. Caitlin, great to see you, of course. I'm sure having that invitation arrive through from Augusta National was no less exciting this time as it was last time. How different are you feeling this year compared to your debut?
Well, this year I've had a bit more time to be prepared. Last year I got a very late invite. I had about 4 days before I had to organize flights and get my family over. So it's nice to feel a little bit more prepared going into it.
And yet you finished 11th last year at Augusta National. I'm curious about once you did get onto the golf course, between the ropes mentality, if you please, how comfortable were you there and how much did you feel like opportunities lie therein?
Well, obviously it's a great opportunity. It's just such a fantastic tournament. Just to be a part of the field is a huge deal. So with getting in so late, I don't think I had a lot of expectation. I was just there to be a part of the experience and have some fun, and it was great to have my family out there. So coming up with a good result was just a bonus.
Well, when the Augusta National Women's Amateur was announced some 4 years ago now, it felt like such a huge step forward in the women's game and such an exciting platform to see some of the best young amateurs compete. In terms of the electricity, I suppose, and the build-up that is felt amongst the young women who get to play in this event, why is it so important to have this opportunity to compete on this stage, do you think?
I think it's extremely important. I think it just shows how much the women's game is growing, and to have it hosted at a place like Augusta is just incredible. I mean, no other tournament other than the Masters is basically held there, so the fact that it's a women's event and an amateur event is huge.
Given the fact that you are a native of South Africa and you're a sophomore at TCU, it's almost as if you have two places to call home. I'm curious what kind of reaction that you got after competing at Augusta National. How many people did you hear from, and what was the excitement level like?
Oh, it was extremely exciting. I had, you know, all my friends and family and supporters back home in South Africa, watching and supporting, watching on TV, and tons of messages from them showing all their support, and from the States as well. I think I didn't really realize exactly how, I knew that it was a big tournament, but I didn't realize exactly how big of a deal it was up until, you know, after finishing the event and hearing back from everyone's feedback, extremely positive.
Well, speaking of back home in South Africa and talent that I'm sure you've looked up to over the years, it must have been huge when Ashley Buhai broke through on the major stage last year at the AIG Women's Open. Talk us through the inspiration that she has been and just how big her profile is for young women like you coming through the game back home.
For sure, Ashley is a huge inspiration. I've looked up to her since I started playing. I used to be coached by her long-term coach. She's just a wonderful person. It's great to see the success that she's had and is continuing to have. So really exciting that, you know, South African golf is pushing through the way that it is.
Caitlin, we are super excited for the opportunity that lies in front of you going back to the Augusta National Women's Amateur once again this year. That and with your college career more, we wish you the very, very best and thank you for your time.
Thank you very much.